Welcome to Establishing Shots, the podcast about the art, craft, and business of filmmaking. I'm Nick Hilton. Welcome back to Establishing Shots. Now, if you're very eagle-eared, if that's a word, you'll have noticed that back in September or so, I recorded an episode with Ben Kent, the director of what was at the time called FUBAR. And I said at the end of that we'd do a follow-up when the film was about to be released. I then delayed, just through idleness, releasing the episode until about 2 months ago. So this is a much quicker follow-up than it would otherwise be if I'd released it more promptly. But I'm back here with Ben, whose film, now called Killer Weekend, is going to be released next week. So we're going to discuss the kind of the process after production and how it's got to the product that you're going to very imminently see on your screens. Thanks, as ever, to our partners at CineView who help distribute this podcast, and without whom we couldn't get many of the guests. And they have this great website for, if you haven't check it out, it's cine-view.com, and they've got loads of features and reviews and that sort of thing. So, Ben.
Hello.
Welcome back to the Establishing Shot studio.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Now, first of all, when we met last time, the film was called FUBAR. And that was the second version of its name, because I kind of grew up as a child thinking of this project as Game Over. So it was Game Over, and then it was FUBAR, and now it's being released as Killer Weekend. Talk me through that.
So Game Over was the original working title. You've written stuff, you know how hard coming up with titles can be sometimes. So at some point you just, you know, do a massive brainstorm, put together every word beginning with, you know, the themes of the film. And after a while, I gave up and settled on Game Over, which was never intended to be the final title of the film, just a working title. And the thing is, you get really used to it and you forget that it was supposed to be a working title. So after, you know, a production, months of post, it was in my head now, just Game Over. And then Netflix released a film last year called Game Over Man, which is also a comedy. And I thought it looked like it might be a big hit, so I decided we better change it quickly. Actually, I don't think the film made much of a splash, but by that time we'd changed it, and we had another one of those brainstorming sessions where we ended up with FUBAR.
And who's we in this context?
This was me and Diane, one of our co-producers. And again, we were never 100% sold on it, because it's a risky title, as it goes. I grew to really like it because I think it's quite unusual. But at the time, we knew that there was a reasonable chance any distributor was going to say change the title. But we pushed ahead with it. And then, surprise, surprise, 6 months later or so, the distributor said, we've got to change the title.
And what reasons did they give for that?
It wasn't commercial because people didn't know what FUBAR meant.
I always said that. I always felt that.
A lot of people said that, you know, people, yeah.
You liked the air of mystery around FUBAR.
I don't know if it was an air of mystery. I thought it would be a talking point. People could see it. They say, what does FUBAR mean? You know, talking. And plus, who hasn't seen Saving Private Ryan? I mean, it's every 11th word in that film.
Okay, so they said, change the title. Did they choose the title for you, or did they give you, were you allowed another go at it? You've proven yourself to be pretty unreliable in this area.
No, we picked the title again.
And you went with Killer Weekend.
We did, which was in our previous brainstorming session, but we'd opted against it.
Feels like probably the safe choice.
Well, pretty much everyone I told after we changed the title just said, yeah, I prefer that. Yeah, to be honest, didn't really like FUBAR.
It's not. It works as a pun, I guess, for one. It's quite nice because, not to spoil anything, but the final shot is sort of them the next day. So it does work. The weekend thing like actually works quite nicely.
It makes a lot of sense.
And also it kind of gives you a clue to the genre. Because I actually think Killer Weekend sounds like a horror comedy title.
It does, yeah.
Because it's punny.
Yeah. It's just, like I say, I grew attached to FUBAR, even though I had, you know, I was fully cognizant when we chose it that it was probably going to get changed. By the time we were told to change it, I was like a struppy teenager. Oh, I can't believe they want us to change this film.
The good news in all that is the presence of a distributor.
That is good news.
Tell me a little bit about it. When I saw that, I sat and watched the film at the industry screening for potential distributors.
Okay, so that was the main screening for distributors, which was probably one of the scariest events of my life, because you've put 3 years or whatever of work into the film by that point. You've given up most of your life, your savings for it. And suddenly you realize your entire life, perhaps that's a little exaggeration, but a large portion of your life comes down to an hour and a half screening. We had, you know, most of the distributors in the UK in there. And yeah.
And it's scary when they walk out.
It's more than scary. I'd say it's depressing. You know, so the impression I get is, you know, these people are business people. It's not whether they like the film even or not. If they have decided by 20 minutes in they're not buying it, they've got to leave because it's a job. And yeah, there was someone sitting next to me who seemed to be enjoying it. And I was thinking, you know, they were laughing at all the right moments. I was thinking, this is going great. And then he walked out. So that was depressing. But, you know, luckily, one of the people in there did want to buy it.
So it was someone at that screening?
Yeah.
Can you talk about your distributor?
Yeah, it was Signature.
In layman's term, for most people who haven't ever signed over a distribution deal, they say, we're interested in your child. And you say, well, my child is for sale. How does that negotiation happen? Do you say, this is the price I sell my child? Or do you just say, yes, here's the child, he's for sale?
In truth, I'm not sure I'm contractually allowed to say that much about, well, certainly the details.
Right. So putting aside like numbers or that mm-hmm. sort of thing, but was it a case of like a lengthy negotiation, a kind of haggle, or was it?
It was a haggle. You got to haggle. Right? And I've watched enough of The Apprentice to know you must haggle.
Right. What sort of rights do you retain? What sort of rights do you give over? What's the kind of, who owns Killer Weekend now?
So they're buying the rights for UK and Ireland distribution and all, you know, the little UK territories around the world. So the rest of the world is still up for grabs at that point. They basically, you know, buy all the rights for pretty much every distribution method for 10 years.
But they buy a kind of locked picture, which they then can't change. If they wanted to make alterations to it now, for instance, if they thought there was a scene that they wanted to cut, could they do that without your permission? Or would that be a conversation they'd have with you?
I think it would be a conversation. I'd have to look at the wording, but I'd imagine. I mean, at the end of the day, they're buying something because they like it. So
yeah, they don't want to create extra work for themselves.
No. And, you know, they've got a lot of films, so.
So worldwide rights, have you got a distributor for?
We have a sales agent called Raven Banner who is taking it to Cannes next week and EFM presumably a few months ago. So it's up to them to sell it to the rest of the world, because I got to admit I wouldn't know where to start in, you know, Azerbaijan.
Yeah. Do you get a sense of feeling of what percentage of your potential market is abroad as compared to in the UK?
It's tricky. So you look at the sales agents will give you projections for worldwide, but they are just projections. So I was actually surprised how small the UK market was relative to the rest of the world. It looked to, you know, them to be about 5%.
Is that just because they think that 5% of, you know, paying cinema audiences live in the UK? Or has it been factored, has it been adjusted for sort of the type of film it is? And like,
yeah, I doubt it has, to be honest. So I was surprised because it's quite, you know, it's quite UK centric. It's quite British humour, I'd say.
But British humour exports quite well.
I do think so, yeah. I mean, actually went to BIFF, which is Brussels International Fantastic Film Festival, a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely phenomenal festival, massive. It took over Brussels for 11 days.
Wow.
And yeah, I watched it play in front of many Belgians and seemed to go down pretty well. So, which I was honestly reasonably surprised by.
How did that audience compare to the Fright Fest crowd?
Fright Fest times two.
Bigger, you mean? But was it louder?
Louder. They are insane. They cheer everything. They shout at the screen. And one of the other things was, so I got there, I had lunch. When I got there, you know, an organized, paid for lunch by the festival who treated us brilliantly. And the guy next to me said, so you know you have to sing before the film when you introduce it, which I obviously thought was a joke at first. Mm. But no, turns out every director has to sing a song to the audience before the film.
Wow.
And apparently only three directors have ever said no, so I wasn't going to be one of them.
What do you sing?
I sang Old MacDonald because I sing it in the film.
You sing it in the film?
I do sing it in the film.
Are you in the film?
No.
When do you sing it in the film? Is that royalty? Is it royalty free, Old McDonald's?
Yeah, it is.
After all these years.
So, you know, spoiler alert, but it is in the first 30 seconds of the film when they're in the car and the children's music comes on.
Oh, that's you singing it.
It's me singing it.
Ah, so did you warn the audience that they were going to hear you again?
I did. I did. I thought it would, you know.
So they sing along? Well, the Belgians know Old McDonald.
They did. I checked that beforehand and they do. And
thank God.
I thought it would get a bit of audience participation going, you know, get them to moo.
It stops you from being, you know, really doing a solo, kind of if the audience chip in.
Well, that's true. But, you know, gets them ramped up for the film.
Mm. So it's coming out next week.
Mm-hmm.
How can people watch it? What are like the distribution mechanisms there?
So it's coming out on VOD. So that will be, as far as I know, iTunes, Amazon On Demand, Sky Store, probably Virgin. Your standard VOD outlets.
Your standard VOD. I guess the big ones are presumably Amazon, Apple, and Sky.
Yeah.
And do you get a sense from your, like, again, from the, have any projections been sent to you of like what share of your market kind of is through?
No.
So I know, like, as someone who makes podcasts for a living, you know, I routinely tell people what, you know, that, like, I know that iTunes is where you're going to get all your distribution. And
I
know,
see. So which, like, of those?
Yeah, I know that, like, Spotify is something which is, like, the second, but, you know, it's a lower priority in terms of, like, pushing subscriptions, that sort of thing. Where's the sort of default place that you would push people towards? Where do you get the best mark? Like,
I do not know. Probably something I should ask them in the next few days.
Well, you've got plenty of time because it's out on, what, the 13th?
Yeah.
May.
Which is Monday.
Which is Monday.
Does anyone watch films on a Monday?
It is the classic day to sit back with your iTunes, on your iPad, watch a horror comedy.
Is it?
How would you recommend people watch it? How do you, like, in your vision of people watching it, what are they doing?
I think it's a film to watch with some friends and a beer. Probably.
Beer and a curry.
Beer and a curry. You don't want to not look at the screen to dish out the curry. Have the curry first, possibly.
Right.
It's a fun film. I don't, you know, it's not a sit in a dark room, take it too seriously film.
Right. Do people have, like, friends over to watch movies anymore? I don't know. Is that a thing? Movie night?
Well, I've definitely heard of Netflix and chill. I presume that's happening.
So is that what you're recommending? Netflix and chill to kill a weekend?
Hey, look, if you've paid for the film, I don't care what you do afterwards. That's not true. I do care. Enjoy it.
You want them to presumably to give you like a 5-star rating on whatever platform they do it.
Yes, please give me a 5-star rating.
And what for you constitutes a success at this point?
Ooh, I'd love it if we could break even. And I'd like actually more than that, I'd like a good rating on IMDb.
So would you take the rating on IMDb rather than, you know, making your money back?
That's a toss-up. Depends how low the rating on IMDb went.
Do you think it's realistic that you're going to make your money back now? Now you're presumably in quite a good position to say.
Honestly, depends on the international picture. And I don't truthfully know what's going on.
And in terms of professionally, what constitutes a success now? Does it matter to you what critics say? I mean, you know, I don't know what sort of critical response you're expecting.
Yeah, I realised I'm a massive snowflake when it comes to this stuff. So I apparently am neurotic and it really does matter to me what people say.
It matters. Obviously, it matters to everyone. Like, obviously, getting any sort of negative feedback in anything is like awful and like it makes you want to bury your head in the ground. But in terms of like, again, it's these kind of metrics of like success. If you got a few nice reviews, do you think that would, you know, is that enough to qualify as a success or is that something which is just avoiding the bad ones is all that really matters at this point.
I mean, we have had some nice reviews already after Fright Fest. So I don't know if that feels like a success or not. I guess I set myself quite a high bar. I didn't want to, you know, I didn't intend to spend years of my life to make an okay film. I want to make a good film. So
if you see a 3-star review, do you feel shitty?
I think a 3-star review is okay. You know, it's not what you aspire to, but it's
a sense of relief that at least it's not worse.
Yeah, I mean, a 3-star review means someone fairly enjoyed it, I suppose. Didn't think it was a great film, but didn't think it was a waste of their time. You know, 5-star reviews is obviously what we're aiming for, but it's a comedy as well. You know, they're very diverse, aren't they?
do you get a sense of like audience responses to the film? I mean, like, are you someone who expecting to spend weeks like trawling through Twitter trying to find any like reference to it? And
yeah, you know, I am, unfortunately, which is why I've decided to go on holiday during the release,
right?
Because I think it's the only way I'll stay sane.
But would that, you know, if like Joe at Joe Random in Bognor Regis, if they really loved it, you know, would it that, you know, mean something to you, or is it just
tragically, yes.
Yeah.
But the downside of that is then his friend who hated it leaves a bad review. That kind of, yeah.
What are the sort of critical processes for VOD? Are we like, because there's always that thing that people game it to do like a limited theatrical release just so they'll get in the national press screenings, and then, you know, are there sufficient, you know, places that review VOD as it increases in?
I don't, you probably know better than me.
Yeah. What's your marketing plan, Ben?
My marketing plan is to go to Costa Rica. Is Signature's marketing plan while I go to Costa Rica. Yeah. I will obviously, you know, post on social media and stuff, but, you know, it's your distributor who does the marketing.
So what's next for you?
So I have a comedy web series about to go onto YouTube called Off the Ball. It's about, what do we call it? The Ugly Side of the Beautiful Game. So it tells the story of three football agents of varying abilities, a super agent, a middling agent, and someone trawling the depths for new footballers. Yeah, it's, I think, 9 episodes of short sketches. So check that out on YouTube. Off the Ball.
When's that going?
I would guess about end of May.
End of May. Okay. And then, you know, in your wider professional, you're working at Foundry, which is a visual effects company at the moment, a very esteemed visual effects company, if I may say so.
I think it is quite esteemed.
And you're happy there, and you're going to continue doing that for the foreseeable future?
Yes. Yes. I'm enjoying the low stress life of normal work. Still probably planning to make another film.
Ooh.
Don't know what it is yet.
But you feel like you're almost at that point in the cycle where you can start thinking about it again. You've given birth and sort of
I think I've recharged, but I don't have a concrete plan yet.
Have you? Do you feel like you've fully let go of, what's it called? Killer Weekend. It's now out in the world.
Well, it's not out in the world. So I think maybe in a month's time, I will have.
When you get back from Costa Rica.
When I get back from Costa Rica and finally check the internet.
Yeah, but creatively. And now, presumably, there's a degree of like financial, you know, uncertainty going forward and that sort of thing. But do you feel like creatively it's come to its conclusion and you can sort of... You're not still anxious about like all the things you did or didn't do with it creatively?
Oh, no. I haven't been anxious about that, yeah, since we finished it, which was the best part of a year ago. I'm also very happy with it, so I don't watch it and think, oh, no, this... would have changed that, you know. I'm not suggesting there's nothing I would have changed, but in a way, creatively, I'd love to make a sequel, so I've not divested of it creatively in that sense, but obviously that will be largely down to what happens commercially at this point.
Is that a discussion you've had with anyone financially, like, you know, financial backers?
No, I don't think it would make sense till we know what the first one did.
Right. And do you have, again, this is, I'm putting you on the spot here, but do you have any concept of what it would have to do in order to make that sort of follow-up project viable?
I guess breaking even would be...
That would be, I don't know, I never know with sequels.
Yeah, I don't know. You know what, I haven't really thought it through.
But I should say, hard. I should know more about sequels, given that this interview is very much a sequel, very much the end game to our previous Infinity War.
Very topical.
Yeah, or our Depending Killer Weekend 2 it. To our Killer Weekend 1. So I would obviously encourage everyone to go out and buy it. Don't illegally download it. It will presumably be available. That's kind of thrilling to... I don't know if you're an illegal downloader of things, but it would be kind of thrilling your film on like a torrent website.
Yeah, it really wouldn't.
Right, maybe it's a very abstract thought.
Well, no, it's obviously something that you have thought of. One has thought of. I guess you don't want to see it up there in a torrent. However, it would be insulting not to be up there in a torrent.
Yeah.
You can't win.
And it would be, if it was, you could see that it was being torrented by like thousands of people, those people were never going to pay for it. Would you rather...
Apparently, everyone I speak to who torrents stuff says they do still pay for it. If they watch it twice, then they buy it.
Right.
I don't believe any of them.
Yeah, no, I think that's bullshit. Would you rather like thousands of people who weren't, yeah, God, this is such a convoluted question. I'm not even going to bother about it. But like, you know, does size matter to you, Ben? Like, does the audience size, you know, do you care how many people watch this?
Yeah, I think it's a mainstream film. I'd like the audience to be as big as possible. It's, you know, I don't think anyone's going to watch it and call it, you know, high art. So, you know, don't be disappointed if that's what you're looking for.
And if they can't afford the $7.99 on Sky, they should presumably then torrent it illegally.
No, then they should wait until
save up.
It comes out on a normal streaming.
Does it have
service.
A BBFC rating?
It must do. I don't know what it is. I mean, I'm going to guess it's a 15.
Okay.
I think it's a solid 15.
So no children listening, because, you know, many of our listeners are children. Great. So that's out on Monday. Well, enjoy Costa Rica, burying your head in the sand, avoiding the reviews. Just as I avoid reviews on this podcast, which you can leave for us, they're actually tremendously helpful on iTunes particularly. And yeah, we'll best of luck, and
thank you.
We'll see you again in the for your next project, your next film. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, and please leave us a review there if you've listened this far. If you've listened this far, you're clearly a huge fan. Please leave us a 5-star review and say some kind words, and it helps people find us. And you can also listen on Spotify, TuneIn, all those various places. And if you're interested in advertising on the podcast, drop me a line at nick@podopods, that's podotpods.com, and we can have a chat about that. Thanks for listening, and speak to you soon.